The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? Yes, it's Thursday, and we're back with a guest. Well, I mean, we had guests, sort of, last week. Of course, lovely Martin Comston popped by to say hello, and you were the guest of sorts. Thank you so much for all the questions that you submitted. They were funny, they were intelligent, they're insightful. I hope we gave funny, intelligent, and insightful answers. And I'm sorry we couldn't get through them all, but, you know, it was, what was it, like 90 minutes? We did a fair bit. We may do another one next year, if you fancy. But, yeah, thanks for that. And it was lovely to see Griff and speak to him, as is 2020, not seeing a lot of other people. So it's really nice when a friend pops up. And what I thought we could do with this week is some positivity in our lives, because look, by sort of 4 o'clock here in the UK, it's dark, it's bleak, it's frosty. We're trying to cobble together some sort of Christmas, but I thought we could use a helping hand, and that helping hand comes in the form of Miss Gabby Roslin. I'm really thrilled that Gabby made some time. She's been ever so busy this year, as always. But we get into it. We talk about comedy. We talk about presenting. It's just great. It's just nice to spend some time with her. It's a great conversation, and I think you're really going to like it. And also, if you're looking for a new podcast, Gabby has one. It's called That Gabby Roslin Podcast, and it's out now on, well, everywhere where you get your podcasts. So go and have a listen. She's got great guests on there. But first, listen to this. This is the Two Shot Podcast with the wonderful Gabby Roslin. Enjoy. I shall see you at the end.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Oh, it's so nice to see you.
Oh, lovely, lovely Craig. One of the nicest people in this industry by a long shot.
Yes, but that is not the reason I've got you on. The reason I've got you on is because I was thinking, and because I book all my guests. I don't have anybody helping me.
Yeah, same with me.
And it's tough, you know, because some people this year especially have said, who've been on my list and we've been speaking and they're dying to come on, they've said, Craig, I'm not feeling particularly great to come on and talk about my life or anything, and I respect it completely, and I totally understand it. So when I was thinking, oh, who can I record with? Well, everybody needs a little bit of positivity in their life right now, and I couldn't think of anybody else who is endlessly positive. And I've known you for years.
Nearly 20 years.
Oh, my God.
No, and actually, I'll tell you when it is, because my youngest was 1 and a bit, and she's now 19.
Fuck a duck.
A long time.
That is a long time.
Let me just turn that off. Hold on.
That's all right.
Go away, everybody.
But I don't find it hard to be positive. I do try. I do, you know, I do try and think of everything as quite glass half full. I do. But this year, for everybody, has thrown up so many problems. How do you manage to keep so positive? Because you do. And
every time
we've spoken, you always are. And you post on social media, you've started your podcast, which is a lovely beacon of sunshine. And I really mean
that's really kind of you. Do you know what, though? I've actually always been like this. When I was a child, everybody always said, they always called me Pollyanna, because I always played, and if anybody that doesn't know it, it's, you know, it's all about the playing the glad game, and you just look at the best for everything. But I was one of those kids who was happy. I just would just go in and I like imaginary worlds, and I always liked making people laugh. So even when I was very, very, very little, not sort of stand up, obviously not stand up. The idea of doing that makes me feel physically sick. Oh. But just making a fool of myself and laughing at myself. And I think if you're able to laugh at yourself, then you can have that sort of outlook on life. And I do wake up a bit like that. And I do drive my kids home. My oldest is back from university now. And I think she probably missed me sitting on top of her singing musical theatre in the morning. But that's what I do.
That's the alarm clock that everybody needs in their life.
What, me sitting on top of them?
Yeah, I think you need to go around and sort that out. That'll cheer people up, no end. Have you found it difficult, though, this year, to be and keep on that sort of positive train?
Well, I have. It's not about staying positive. I think I've always looked for the best in everything. So I always, I've always believed that the most important things in life are kindness. It's where I was brought up. My parents said, because I bore everybody with it, but I only ever wanted to be a TV presenter. I love TV more than anything on this planet. My kids are used to me saying that, says my husband. But that's all I ever wanted to do. And they said to me, okay, follow your dreams, but be kind and don't hurt anybody in the process. So it's been so drummed into me in a good way that you have to be kind. So for me, it's always about kindness. And I think kindness came to the fore this year. Laughter is the best medicine. So I love laughing. And I think that we've seen a lot of people, a lot of the comedians, a lot of people who are performers trying to bring that into our lives. I think the things that I found hard are not doing television like I'd like to be. I mean, I'm very happy to do things from my bedroom, but doing live inserts into shows, or the other day we had a big pitch meeting with my lovely agent, and we had this huge pitch and we were pitching these three shows. And you know when you have those meetings that go really, really well? Because I know you do. That you're buzzing afterwards. And there is nothing weirder than coming off the Zoom and just sitting there in your bedroom going, oh, right. And you couldn't go for a drink. I mean, I don't drink booze. But, you know, you couldn't go out. You couldn't buzz about it. You couldn't talk about it. My agent then called me on FaceTime. This sounds so showbiz, but, I mean, this is the reality of it all. And my agent called me on FaceTime, said, I just wanted to see your face because I knew you were really thrilled by that pitch. And I said, yeah, but I feel so deflated now because it was... You're heightened. Your excitement is heightened and somebody gets your ideas. And then you go, oh, I'm just here in my bedroom. Okay. So those are moments where I love people. That's why I'm so nosy. I love chatting to people. And so I went out. I went for a walk, which is what I do. I love walking. I think it's a real saviour.
Yeah, it's been a great saviour for me this year, walking, going off on big, when I can, and going off a nice 2-3 hour walk. Now, you say you're nosy there. I don't think you're nosy. I think you're like me and you're curious.
I'm nosy as well.
Are you nosy?
I really am. Because if I'm walking and it's dark, I love those houses that have their curtains open and you can look in.
Do you know what that's called?
Nosy.
No, there is an actual name for that, for people who...
Peeping Tom? Look.
No, that's borderline flashing, Gabby.
Oh, no, you wouldn't be doing that.
No, 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 that'd be awful. No, there is a name. I'll have to look it up That's all right.
A name for people who look inside people's windows.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it not just? It's just rude. Nosy. Well, really? Is there an actual name?
Yeah, there is. There is. I'm going to have to look that up. But, you know, you say it's rude, but therefore, if you don't want people looking in, shut the blinds, shut the curtains. You're attracting the lights in there. You automatically want to look, don't you? Surely.
Oh, I am. But I've always been like that. And actually, that's another thing I've grown up with. My dad's in his 80s and he's on his own. Mum died many, many, many years ago. Mm. And he's found it really tough, all of this, and his world has shrunk. But I forced him to go out for a walk every day. So he goes for a 2 or 3 mile walk every day, which is great.
Yeah.
And he says to me, I love it. I look inside everybody's houses. Great.
Oh, I wonder where you get it from, Gabby.
I wonder.
Now, I do want to talk about the fascination of wanting to be a TV presenter from when you were small. Was that something that stemmed from your dad?
Dad worked at the BBC.
Yeah.
So it, just with everybody, my dad was a continuity announcer. He was the person that you can hear in between all the shows. And he also worked on Radio 4 as a newsreader. So I only ever knew my dad in that job. He was a staffer at the BBC. And I went to work with him, as people do. You go to work with your parents.
Yeah.
My mum was a doctor's receptionist. That was quite fun because I pretend I was a doctor. But it wasn't the same as going to work with dad. And so from a very young age, I went to work with him. And I watched Blue Peter going out. There were viewing galleries, and I was standing up at the viewing gallery, looking with my hands against the glass and my face pressed against the glass, watching this all going on. And for me, because I loved watching television, I could watch television all day, although when I was little, it wasn't on all day, but I could watch it as much as possible. I then saw it being made when I was 2 or 3, and then I went down onto the floor of Blue Peter when I was a little older. So I was about 3. Mm. And my father, who trained at RADA to be a broadcaster, he had been at RADA with a woman called Valerie Singleton, who presented Blue Peter. Mm. So dad had taken me in there and I used to just watch from the viewing gallery. And then one time dad said, would you like to go down and meet Val? And I went, and I did. I went onto the studio floor and I saw the cameras. I saw everybody running around. I saw how they did the make and do's on Blue Peter. And I absolutely, from that moment, knew there was nothing else I wanted to do on this planet, because I just thought, oh, I love watching television. I want to make television. I never, ever thought about fame or any of that. It did not cross my mind at all. It was purely about making television, because it made me happy to watch telly, and I had this obsession about making everybody happy. So that hasn't changed. And so I then went home, and I used to sit next to the television set, and dad would be the cameraman on the sofa, and I'd be the fourth presenter of Blue Peter. I'd be very worried because I'm allergic to cats, but it was okay because I wasn't actually in the studio with the cat, so it wasn't going to make me sneeze. And then I learned about auto cues. I just, everything I could find out. I had every book you could have about television.
Wow.
And films. And then my mum used to write stories on a loo roll, and then she'd pull it down, and I'd do auto cue on that. So there was nothing else I wanted to do. And even when I was very little at school, you know, when they say, what do you want to do? I said, oh, TV presenter. And then Saturday morning telly started, and I watched the very first one. And I phoned in, I think it was week 2 or week 3, because they had phone in.
Yeah.
And I was very little, but I phoned in the number. It was Noel Edmonds. I don't know how old I was, probably 8 or 9, and I phoned in and I thought, oh, I'm going to be on telly, just to get to be on telly. And then I watched that and knew it was no longer Blue Peter. It was Saturday morning telly. So I just wanted to chat to everybody, because I did. Everywhere I went, I was very shy, but I talked to anybody. And at school, I was always told off for laughing and talking. And I used to say, well, I'm practicing to be a TV presenter. And it wasn't a sort of, I was desperately shy, so I couldn't speak. but I talk to strangers. So, and that's just it. And that's me in a nutshell. I just knew that's what I wanted to do. So when I did Saturday morning telly, there is nothing quite as bizarre as doing your ultimate dream.
I bet. And it's like, you talked about Blue Peter then and Saturday morning telly, and the two couldn't be more different, really, even though they catered to
a
certain...
It was live. It was immediate. And I got the live thing even when I was little.
But I'm talking about how anarchic Saturday morning telly was, certainly.
Well, not when I was little.
When I was growing up. It was like something else. It was like speaking to this certain demographic that I never really connected with Blue Peter. I found it slightly too straight-laced, certainly for my tastes.
I think that's probably why I liked when Saturday morning came in. It was pop stars and it was TV stars and it was naughty. I was never... I'm very straight, but I was always cheeky. So as a very straight girl, I was always very cheeky. So I knew how to make someone laugh or go... I sort of knew what a double entendre was before I should have known. So that was my sense of humour. And, so Saturday morning telly, it was still quite straight, but then it got more anarchic. And then Tis Was happened. And then when I did Motormouth, it was great. I loved Saturday morning telly. I miss it. I think it should be on for kids today.
Is it not on anymore?
No, sorry, it's just cooking. It's cooking.
Oh, it's just cooking, of course
it is. Does your baby boy watch telly?
Well, here's the thing.
You don't have a telly still, do you?
No. Ah, no, well, I'm going to go on to that. You say baby boy, he is 9 and a half now.
Yes, he's still your baby boy.
I know, he'll always will be. We're one of those. It's your parent, he always will be, obviously.
Yeah.
He's only had a television physically there in the living room for 2 years because we just didn't have a television for a long, long time.
Does my head in.
Not to say that I didn't watch or adore and love television, of course I do, but I just feel that, you know, there was a time where I thought, I'm just not going to get anything done. I'm just going to, because I adore it so much, I'm just going to watch and watch and watch and watch.
That's me, but actually didn't do you any harm. Look at that. I'm not going to interview you, but you are an outstanding actor. And the idea that you haven't watched loads of telly, you're just a natural actor. That makes me even more in awe of you.
I do now. I watched The Queen's Gambit.
Oh, I can't get into it. Please. I'm the only person I know.
No. Yeah. I mean, my mum and dad were very bored and they said, oh, we seem to have watched everything. Yeah, of course. I'm sure you have, but let's see if we can find you something else. And I said, right, I've just watched, and bear with me, I've just watched this drama about a young chess protege, and it's gripping and it's well acted and it's shot and it looks beautiful and it's sexy and the costumes are great and it's intriguing. I said, you'll watch, and they rinsed it all in like 2 nights.
Oh, see, I watched the first 20 minutes and I just was like, no, it didn't grab me. I didn't like all the, it was trying to be too clever. I don't like things that are trying to be too clever. I love a really good drama. I love, well, you know, the stuff that I love. Anything with you in. But I needed to get into it. It's like a book. I love reading. But in the first 100 pages it doesn't grab me, I have to put it to one side.
Oh, my God, you give it 100.
I do. Because I was too quick. And I said years ago, I give it 20 pages. And everybody was that's disgusting. Give it more. So I go to 100 now.
But you'll still only give 20 minutes of a...
20 minutes. If a show doesn't grab me straight away, because I love TV so much, there's too much that I want to watch.
Exactly. And look, each to their own. And if they were super clever, they wouldn't have made 7 episodes. They could have crammed this in 4.
That's what everybody says.
Never heard anybody say that. I haven't really read anything about it. But yeah, I think the first 2 episodes are exceptional. And that young girl who plays, she's off the charts. She's brilliant.
All right, I'll give it another go.
No, you don't have to.
The second person today, my friend Simon, said exactly the same, and he said they should have done it in 4 parts.
Yeah.
And then,
What else have you been watching? Here's the thing, right? For me, at the very start of this year, I And I remember speaking to Samantha Morton a while back. We both found it very, very difficult. That's not name dropping. She was on the podcast. Found it very difficult to focus on screens, to focus on books. The only thing I could do was cook and listen to podcasts like this with people talking, so I could feel that I had something
else.
People
around you. Yeah,
people around me. Yeah. I mean, I found that very comforting for an hour, and then all of a sudden things end, the food's prepped and it's cooked, and I have to try and focus on something else. Did you find that, or
no?
Okay?
I love it. That's going to be my headline. That's going to be on my gravestone. She loved telly.
Not even a global pandemic puts Gabby Roslin off focusing on television.
And actually, I think we've devoured it more voraciously. I mean, it's just been one more. And I so what have I watched? Succession. We watched the whole lot at the beginning. Mm. I thought that was outstanding. I cannot wait for the next one. And it's very rare for my husband and I to like the same things, because we really don't. I love entertainment.
I didn't find that entertaining at all. I found that really, really tough going.
I've loved Strictly. You see, Strictly has been a wonderful, glorious escape. And also, a friend of mine was in it this year, and I love Strictly. So yes, I absolutely love all of that as well. But Succession, This Country, as you know, because you
of
and
course.
I,
oh
my, no. We watched it from beginning to end, and then backwards, and then we picked out our favourites. I mean, every single night at 11:15, he and I would sit and watch it, and I love it. I think Daisy May Cooper, she's come into her own in lockdown, and she's incredible.
Yeah.
I loved Staged, but my husband found it too stagey, so I really enjoyed that. I loved it. I loved Call My Agent, which I watched with my oldest daughter.
Please tell me, have you finished all three seasons of
Call
My Agent?
And I want more.
Well, I had to put something out on social media a few weeks ago saying, when Netflix, please tell me when is season
Isn't
4 coming,
brilliant?
Because we
but
need
you know they're
it.
They're doing it in the UK.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about this.
Are you going to be on this, it?
No, this upsets me immensely.
Why?
And I know it upsets Jake Yap, definitely, and Julia Rayside, definitely, because it is French.
I completely agree with you. Sorry, I didn't know what. Okay, yes. Yes, I thought you meant you were upset because they haven't called you. But
absolutely
they
not. No, absolutely, that it should stay where it is. Do not.
100%.
It will not transfer. I mean, obviously, they're going to cast Roger Allam because he's the French Roger Allam, but don't do it. Look, they smoke, they drink in that Parisian way, they speak, they have passion and
yes,
venom, and it just won't work. And I, for one, would not
no,
watch.
I agree.
It would.
God, you're right about Roger Allam. That's yeah. really bizarre. Oh my yeah, God!
Absolutely, of course. Even the hair. I mean, it's exactly who it is. Parisian
that's
Roger
so
Allam.
Funny.
I mean, whoever cast that, just tick. That's easy.
That's brilliant.
Done.
I love that show. Mm. And The Crown. I think it's a beautifully made. Beautifully made.
I've never seen The Crown.
Do you know what? Even if you're not interested in the royal family, everybody I know who was very anti-watching it, this season especially, it's beautiful. It's the filmography is stunning. No, is that the word? Is that a word?
Do you mean the cinematography?
That's
you mean
the word.
The way it looks?
Yeah. Beautiful. That's the word. Yes, I'm not a film, although I do a film show, but that's different. But I loved it. I'm very sad that we finished watching it. You know that feeling of, oh no, it's over.
Yeah, I had this discussion with my friend's wife on Friday when I delivered I was supposed to have some friends round, basically. And obviously we had to cancel. So I said, well, look, I'm still going to cook, but I'm going to deliver you food to all your houses.
Oh, you are lovely.
And I had to change the menu because there's only certain things that will travel, obviously. And I went to the last house and I was at a distance delivering food. And we were talking about television. And my friend's wife said, yeah, no, never seen The Sopranos. And I went, I feel...
I've never seen The Sopranos.
Gabby Roslin.
I know, but actually it's like that, and there's another thing, which I'm going to admit, which drives everybody mad, especially because I do, I'm not plugging the film show, but we do, Gabby's
we'll
Talking Pictures.
We'll get on to that in
but
a minute.
I've never seen, oh, I'm actually a bit embarrassed. No, are you ready?
Yeah.
I've never seen The Godfather, any of them.
That's. I think that's fine.
Oh, really?
I mean, I think
most
it's
people
fine.
Really don't
everybody
like that.
Go, everybody, go, look, one and two, fantastic, incredible. I wouldn't need to worry about three. I'm probably going to get a load of shit for that now. But look, don't worry. For some things, I would say I'm jealous that you haven't seen it. I would only say that with something like The Sopranos.
Okay, all right. We'll start that then.
Or quite possibly The Wire.
The Wire. I've never seen that either. Oh, my God. And I'll tell you, I've got a really, really... Actually, I've got... Do you want a completely showbiz story about that?
Do you know what? I want all the showbiz stories, Gabby, because this is going to cheer people up. Give me some showbiz stories, please.
Oh, it's embarrassing. So, Paul O'Grady is a very close, dear friend of mine. We've known each other 25 years, and he was doing his evening chat show. And I went on as a guest. He gave me a call. Gab, come on. And I went on. I don't know what I was talking about. And there was this really, really lovely guy, very tall, very handsome, lovely guy who I was chatting to in the green room and got on really well. And we were chatting away. We were chatting about London, how we both love London. And he was talking about shows that I'd done. And then I said, I'm so sorry, what do you do? And he said, I'm an actor. I went, oh, that's great, that's great. Now, I, as somebody who watches everything and loves and has interviewed ridiculous, you know, you name them. Anyway, so I was looking, thinking, oh, I'm so embarrassed. And I kept saying to him, I'm so sorry. He said, no, it's all right, it's all right. And then he was talking about Hackney and he loved Hackney. And I just went, oh, great. Anyway, so I went in, went onto the show. I was the first guest. And then Paul O'Grady said, and the next guest, Idris Elba. And he walked out and he looked at me and he pointed at me and he said, she's never seen The Wire. I went, oh, no, I haven't. I haven't. Of course, everyone's mad. Anyway, do you know what? We every time we see each other, he just goes, Roslyn! And he's lovely,
lovely,
lovely.
Man.
I have such a very innocent crush on him and he should be James Bond. But I think he's a lovely guy and... I'm sure, as you do, I'd love to chat to him on the podcast. But
absolutely,
it's one of those things, every single time I see him, he goes, why haven't I been on your radio show? And I feel like saying, well, come on. What do you mean, why haven't I? I've tried. But he was lovely. So that's my embarrassing The Wire story.
But I think you should. I think you should delve into the Baltimore streets of The Wire. I will admit...
We have it as a box set that somebody gave me when I said it.
I had to watch the first episode two or three times because you have to retune into the accent because it's so different and so authentic that what they're doing, it's incredible.
Now, we know that finding and keeping hold of motivation is tough at the best of times, especially this year, let's be honest, right? But I'm going to tell you one thing. I have got involved this year with some personal training, and it is the best thing I have done, right? It's going to release all those endorphins that, obviously, look, it's great for your body to train. Of course it is. But it's also essential for your mental health. And that's why I got involved with the PT Factory. Now, if you want a chance to have a taster session one-to-one with a male or female trainer of your choosing who know exactly what they're talking about, go to theptfactory.co.uk. You fill in the form on the section, just put in TSP PT. You're going to get a free taster session. You can sit down, talk about your wants, your needs, your goals. They're going to talk you through because they have all the knowledge to help you achieve what it is that you want. So go to theptfactory.co.uk. What have you got to lose?
I want to talk about interviewing. And the fact that you have interviewed so many people, but it never feels, and I've been lucky enough to be interviewed by you a few times, but it never feels like you're asking people questions. And because I've been, you know, doing this and interviewing people for 3 years, I'm just learning, and I love to learn off people. And it's like,
well, that's why I love listening to you, because you do. I see the most important thing, and I think I hope I did. I contacted you when you were first starting out. I just went, this is great. What you've done is, it's great what you're doing. And I think that the most important thing, and that my dad taught me because he was an interviewer as well, that you don't have these fixed questions where the way I always say it to somebody is, if you say, if you're going to talk to somebody who love, you found out that their one love are giraffes. They just love giraffes. That's what they love. They love giraffes. So your whole thing, you've worked it out, giraffes and this, that and the other. And then the very first question you said, so I know you love giraffes. They said, not anymore, I love lions. And then you go, yeah, so where was the first time you saw a giraffe? You know, just listen. If you listen to the person you're talking to, you get a conversation, not an interview. I don't like interviews. I like conversations.
Yeah, exactly. Very much like what you and Dermot O'Leary do. The two big sort of favourites of mine.
But oh, thank you.
When I've been interviewed in the past, certainly I'm talking about live television now, they've got, did they call it the gallery?
Yeah, and the earpiece. So you have a
they've
little
got an earpiece. Yeah. And they've got lots of other people talking to them, so they'll ask their questions. See, you get off on that, but sometimes when I've been interviewed by people, they ask a certain question and then they glaze over and they're not listening to me, they're listening to the other people. So how do you
No. Well, that's bad. No, because I've been doing it so long. But also I don't get fed questions. I wouldn't ever want that. So what I'm hearing is knowing exactly what's going on. So whilst I'm interviewing you, then I'll know that the director's decided to go to camera 4 and that the next guest is turned up late and that the production assistant has just dropped coffee all over the desk. So I know what's going on. But if you ask my husband, he'll tell you that I do that when we go out. So we go out, if we go out in those old days when you could go and sit inside in a restaurant, you know, we'd go out to eat or we'd go out for a drink in the pub and I would be listening into everybody's conversations and I'd listen to him and we'd leave and I'd say, oh my God, do you know what they were talking about? You would never be. She just had an affair and she just told him. So I'll tell you everything that's going on. But I've always done that, even as a child. So even on the bus, I remember going on the bus to school and I'd listen into everybody's conversations. And that's how I'd sort of get accents and know what's going on around.
So do you think
nosy,
that's,
you see?
Well, we're coming back to that, you see. Is that, do you think, so do you think it's just practice then? Because a lot, you know, when I'm asked about learning lines, for instance, especially with big, big, long chunks of scenes, and they say, oh, well, how do you do it? And I just go, well, you just read and read and read until you know it backwards, and you just, it's just practice.
Yes, it is probably. And also the fact that I've always done it. I don't know. I'm very lucky that I find it exciting. I don't like it if I go into a studio and I don't have, that they have, it's called closed talk back or open talk back. Open talk back means you can hear everything that's going on. Closed talk back means you just get stuff that's coming through to you. So I like it to be open. But I remember there were times when I've done shows where the editor or the producer in my ear knows that they're trying to throw me. And I can think of a particular time. And she's a wonderful, wonderful woman who is brilliant in television. And she kept trying to throw me. And I won't repeat what she was saying in my ears. And afterwards she said, oh, my God, it didn't work. I said, no, how dare you be so rude? It was very funny. It was very vulgar, but very funny.
So you can keep it straight for
live
television.
Yeah, but I'm a dreadful giggler. So I'll find another reason to giggle.
Ah, OK, so you cover it.
Cover it. I'll just giggle. In fact, about 20 minutes before we were speaking, my youngest, she got stuck she got stuck trying to fix a lamp for me, and she was screaming, going, "Mom, Mom, I'm stuck." And I became so hysterical, I couldn't get her out, so I pretended I'd left the room, and I was laughing uncontrollably. So I am a dreadful giggler. I will giggle always at the worst times when you're not supposed to. And that's the thing that we talk about on my podcast, where I always ask everybody what makes them laugh, and then we all end up giggling, because it's, you know, if somebody walks into a tree, there's nothing funnier. And if somebody's trying to be very rude in my ear when I'm trying to be very serious, I have to laugh about something else. I told you I have a good imagination, so I'll suddenly say, "Oh, you won't believe what I was thinking of."
I mean, that is a skill in itself. I suppose it's a little bit like somebody trying to put you off on stage.
Your lines, yes.
In front of a live audience.
I've done that too. I'm very naughty. When we did Harry Met Sally on the last matinee, I was being very naughty. It's like me when I ever played. I wasn't very good at sports, but I love working out. But I was never good at sports. But if I ever played tennis, I would play tennis to do everything wrong to make somebody laugh. That's how I'm. I'm very. Naughty.
But surely things like that keep you alive. And I don't mean alive, alive. I mean alive.
Yeah, yeah. Act the fool, make someone laugh. There's nothing better than somebody just thinking you're completely nuts.
But to always punch down, to never punch up. Which one? Because I was talking about comedy the other day with Nigel Planer, and...
Oh, my word. How's Nigel Planer?
Incredible. And well. And
good.
Being cooked for by his wife during this lockdown. And we were talking about when comedy tips over into cruelty. And I hate it, and I find it so
like
uncomfortable and
all.
Unfair. And we were going back through bits. We went down a comedy geek sort of rabbit hole, which... obviously I adored. And I was talking about when I used to watch Lauren Hardy as a child, and it resonates still now when I've watched it with my boy, is because they, you know, it's innocent.
It's funny.
But also they're not playing comedy. They're trying to be truthful, and they're trying to get this big plane of glass into the house, or they're trying to put the ladder up, or they're trying their best to do it. And that's just the root of all comedy.
No, I really hate, but I hate anything cruel. I really do hate anything cruel. Mm. I hate nastiness. I don't like cruel humour because I don't find it funny. So I like slapstick, but not slapstick as in a pie in the face, but like I said, Lauren Hardy, when you say that, just the biggest smile on my face, because we were all brought up with it. Mm. But Eric and Ernie, you know, and actually Anton Deck do a brilliant job. They're lovely. And I like carry-on humour, although when I watch it back now, God, it's sexist and shocking and racist. But there are elements of that innocence. There is a tremendous innocence. I like it, innocent humour. I hate nasty humour. I hate anything that I remember seeing a certain comedian we went to see live at the Apollo. It doesn't matter who the person was. You'll probably guess by what I say. But he was being really nasty about disabled people. And he made a joke about Nazis. And as a Jewish person, I found it utterly offensive. Mm. And nobody laughed. And he got off on that. And I just find that disgusting. So that sort of humour, no thank you.
And also it's cheap.
It's horrible. And why be nasty about somebody? I mean, look at Michael McIntyre. I know for years people were saying, "Oh, he's really dull. He's really dull." Well, he's not actually. He's funny. And he says things that we all think. And I've seen him do his show at a charity event that I was hosting, and he came on. And he did his routine about turning off a light switch in a hotel, which was so innocent, but so funny. And you saw people groaned when he came out. And when he left, everyone stood up.
But it's a form of art. It's subjective.
Oh, so lovely.
I remember years ago, I was working with a brilliant stand-up comedian. And he said, "Oh, I'm doing this Irish night of Irish comedians in the West End." He said, "Come along." So I went along. And he wasn't top of the bill. And I thought, oh, God, that's kind of odd that he's not top of the bill. Ardlo Hanlon was top of the bill. And it was a time when Ardlo Hanlon had kind of forgotten about how incredible he was, certainly for a brief moment, in Father Ted. And you still go back to that and you think, oh, my God, that's brilliant.
Genius!
But he was more well-known for doing My Hero, which for those who either aren't in the UK or can't remember, My Hero was a very low bar, not to do it disservice, but it was what it was. It was 8 p.m, not even Can Laughter audience sitcom. It was
Very
formulaic.
Yeah.
It was by the numbers book about a mild-mannered superhero from another planet who had a guise as just a normal working bloke. And it was, that's what he was well known for. And he was top of the bill. So automatically I went, oh, God. And you know what? He came on stage and I could feel that with a lot of people. It was one of the best stand-ups I've ever seen.
Oh, you see,
he was just incredible, and I felt awful because you go immediately, I'm judging on what I may or may not have seen on the television. It was incredible. Where are you with? See, we're going to go down a big comedy cul-de-sac.
Yeah,
now.
Go for it.
Where are you with the comedy of embarrassment? Because I know some of my friends just they can't watch it because they themselves feel too uncomfortable in watching it.
It depends. I don't like anybody taking the piss out of anybody else, but I don't mind. I like political humour if it's clever, you know, all of those things. And I think we have to laugh at most things. But I don't like. It depends what you mean by embarrassing.
Well, let's...
How far?
Okay, well... So some people I know haven't watched The Office because they just find it too uncomfortable.
Oh, no, that makes me... I find it really uncomfortable, The Office. Afterlife, I went straight down Ricky Gervais' world. Afterlife Series 1 was superb. But I just... I found The Office just, it made me embarrassed. You're right. It's that I can appreciate it, but I didn't laugh at it.
Well, it's a bit appreciating. You can appreciate someone like Michael McIntyre or any other forms of comedy, but if it's not for you, it's not for you. That's not to say it's not funny. It's just
not for you. Well, there are some,
I
think, who aren't funny. I thought you were going to mention him, but there's a particular guy, that guy I was talking about before.
I know who you mean.
Not funny.
Yeah.
It's just not funny. And anyone that finds that funny, I question that.
Yeah, but you say that. You say
Fools and Horses was embarrassing. Fools and Horses, they would do things and it would make you cringe, but yet it was... You could laugh. There were moments you could laugh at. I mean, I'm trying to think of new... But this country that we were talking about, I will always go back to that because I think it's one of the greatest comedies ever.
Yeah.
There were moments where you just would be cringing, but it's so thoughtful in its embarrassment that actually I think that's why it works.
But I think things like that, certain thing, you know, you touch on Only Fools and Horses and you touch on something like This Country... In very different ways, they both had a lot of heart.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So much heart. So, therefore, you could invest as an audience member.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine can't watch This Country because he said it's exactly like where he was brought up. And he said he can't watch it. He said it's like going back all those years.
Well, I lived for many years not far from where they filmed This Country and... It pretty much is like that, I would say. We were talking about anarchic Saturday morning television a while ago, and I was thinking about breakfast television, and it was a little bit like you and the Big Breakfast team when it first started, got the manual of how to broadcast breakfast television, poured a load of lighter fuel on it and just threw some lit matches at it. Because I don't think anybody had seen anything like...
I hadn't. It was very funny because I went from Saturday morning telly and after doing 3 years of that, I remember the press, or, you know, doing all those interviews, and they say, oh, you know, what's your dream job next? And I'd say, I want to do this, but every day of the week. And I mean, I could probably find those articles. I remember doing it in the, you know, tabloid newspapers, and it was, what do you mean every day? I was, can you imagine this? Every day of the week, that would be amazing. And they'd say, yeah, but it's, that's not going to happen. Well, you never know. And then I got the call about the Big Breakfast, and I did 5 screen tests. It's sort of, it's one of those stories that I've told a lot. And I did 5 screen tests, but the very first time I turned up, I didn't know anything about it. And my mum had seen a bit in the newspaper that had said that Bob Geldof was going to be doing a new breakfast show, and it was going to be different than anybody had expected. And I remember my mum saying, well, that's the sort of thing you keep saying you want to do. Going, oh, yeah, Bob Geldof? Bob Geldof, what do you mean? And sort of that was vaguely in the back of my head. And then I got a call from my agent to say, they want you for a screen test for this new show. You're going to be screen testing with a guy called Chris Evans. And I said, oh, he used to do early Saturday morning telly before we were on air with Motormouth. He was on whatever it was then, TVAM or something. He did a very early morning kids show.
Right.
And we used to watch him in the makeup chair. And I remember thinking, God, he's clever. And we all used to talk about how clever he was. I remember him doing some sketch in a phone box. And I turned up for the first screen test, and the two of us just, it was extraordinary. We just got on, and they said, oh, well, you know, just say exactly what's going on and everybody's going to be in shot. And I just thought, this is amazing. And I left there buzzing, and then I waited, and then they called me back for another one with Chris, and then they called me back again. And then I went away for a week to France with my then boyfriend. And I had to phone them every day to find out whether or not they'd made a decision. And every day I made that phone call, and they said, we haven't made a decision yet. Then I came back and I did the 4th screen test. And then I went for the 5th one. And by now I was beaten into a pulp of, oh my God. And I went for the 5th one, and Chris was there. I think there were a couple that Chris wasn't there. They just wanted to see me interacting with kids, doing competitions, doing all sorts of things, and just ad-libbing. Because I've never had a script. So luckily, Saturday morning telly, there was no scripts. And this didn't have scripts. Big Breakfast didn't have scripts. So they just wanted to see if I could talk. Yeah, I can talk. And then the very last one, I turned up, and very kindly and very extraordinarily, Chris, they started, they went 3, 2, 1, and then Chris just went, stop! And I thought, oh my God. And he said, please, somebody just give this girl the job. This should be her job. She should be doing this. And then I left thinking, oh dear, that was embarrassing. And then I got a phone call to say, could I go to the office? And so I went to the office of the production company, and I had to walk through an open plan office into a glass office, and there was the two guys who from Planet 24 and the editor. So there was Charlie Parsons, Wahid Ali and Sebastian Scott, and they said, okay, have your back to everybody. We're here to tell you that we're offering you the job, but you cannot tell anybody. You cannot tell a soul, and you have to walk out of this office as if you haven't been told the answer yet. It's the biggest kept secret anywhere. We're going to be telling our publicists, you'll do one interview and then you'll be on air. And I had to walk out of that office completely straight-faced. Oh. I thought I was going to wee myself. I really properly did. I thought I was going to cry. I had this weird mixed emotions. And then I got into the car, and my boyfriend was in the car because he'd driven me there. And I said, you have to just drive. And we drove. And he pulled over, and I screamed and screamed and cried and shouted, and I couldn't believe it. And then we drove around to my parents and I told them. And then a week later, I was doing this one bit of press. And then 2 weeks later, I was doing the show. It was extraordinary.
And that show, when I think about it, set a template for so many other shows going forward throughout the years. The fact that it involved the crew, you could hear the crew laughing. I mean, we spoke about Ant and Dec before. I mean, they really involved.
Well, the first TV they did as presenters was on The Big Breakfast. They came on and they presented with Zig and Zag in the bathroom and on holiday relief for Chris. And I remember saying to them, you've got to be TV presenters. And I thought they were brilliant. It was a great breeding ground for a lot of people. And a lot of people who behind the scenes of The Big Breakfast are now controllers of channels. Mm. I mean, it's everywhere you go, there's somebody from Planet 24.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, Richard Bacon was there, wasn't he?
Richard was there. That was after me.
Yeah.
Melanie Sykes, she was there in the summer holidays. You know, Amanda Byram.
The great Paula Yates.
Paula, bless Paula. She was there. Well, Chris, Paula and I were the originals.
Yeah, who interviews anybody from a bed anymore? It just can't be done because she just broke the mold with that. I mean, it was just incredible.
Well, then Lily Savage took over and that's where Paula and I became great friends. So Lily Savage took over.
But was Lily interviewing from a bed?
Yeah.
Was she?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's brilliant. Yeah. Now, you always make things seem very easy to me when I listen to you, when I watch you be interviewed. You must have come up with some sort of battles during being interviewed or interviewing somebody else. What do you do if you get sort of stonewalled, if people are... I mean, we...
It's only happened... It's actually happened twice in my career. Once was I was doing a Saturday night show for Channel 4 and an American actress turned up and she was fine until she went into the loo. And all I could hear in my in my earpiece was she won't come out of the bathroom. And we were live. It was a live show.
Oh,
and so
God.
We went to an ad break and I was going, oh, my God, what's happening? And they went, she won't come out of the bathroom. Anyway, she came out of the bathroom and then I looked. So I did the introduction and I looked at her and her eyes were spinning and she was gurning.
Oh, God.
And to this day, I would never say why she wouldn't come out of the bathroom or what she'd been doing. But it was the most extraordinary way to interview. She was sort of, oh, yeah, I don't know, idea. And we went to an ad break very quickly.
Oh,
but she was very sweet.
God.
And another time was somebody just said, no.
That's the opposite.
But that's it.
That's the opposite
33
ends.
Years.
You've got one person who won't shut up because they've been in the toilets too long and one that's just giving one word, nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just impenetrable. You can't, how can you?
Well, but like I said, you know, in the 33 years I've been doing it, that I still can just name two people. And there have probably been some who haven't been very forthcoming or friendly, but I like speaking to people who haven't got something that they're wanting to plug. But if they have got something they want to plug, I always talk about something else as well. And then they always think that they haven't necessarily plugged it. So I don't go into, tell me that how you made this film. I'll ask them about jumping out of an aeroplane and then we'll go on to the film. So, only twice it's been a bit tricky.
And also if you go in with those questions about what they're trying to flog, they're going to give you the stock answer that they've given to seven other interviews, which is, you know, that's just dull for you as an interviewer and anybody listening.
But sometimes you do get, which you'll know now, but sometimes you get told that you can only ask questions about that. But I always twist it around. I remember there was one great, lovely, lovely movie star. Recently, it was Ryan Gosling, and he was so lovely. We went in and they said, right, just you're asking about the movie. I went, yeah. And I went in, I said, and the first thing I said was, they've told me I can only ask you about the movie. And he said, no, that's not true. So if you go in with that, then we chatted about all sorts of things.
That's a top tip there, Gabby.
I'm
taking that on board.
Because
I was reading an interview a few weeks ago in the New York Times with Nicole Kidman, and it was a really lovely interview.
Yes, your friend, Nicole.
We don't talk about that. She seemed to be on great form, but the interviewer in some of his retorts, he would say, oh, when I asked you that question there, that seemed to upset you, or did I touch a nerve there? And she would go, no, it's absolutely fine, ask what you want. It was almost like he was being provocative.
Oh, I can't bear that.
In the piece. And I just thought, why would you do that? Because that it ceases to become about the subject and it's falling back on you.
I can't bear that. I don't like that. I mean, we've been naughty to you in the past, Vicky, and when I was interviewing you and I wanted to stitch you up, but that was, I stitched you up with Vicky and then you helped me stitch up Danny Mays on live telly. So those sort of things I don't mind doing when you know somebody and if it's fun. But I don't like trying to get, upset anybody. I also don't want somebody, if they want to be honest and about some things that I've been told not to ask them about, that's their prerogative.
Exactly.
That's not about me. The interviewer is the least important. My guest is the most important.
Yeah, which is, it's just normal and natural, surely. Yeah. I've just found it very odd.
I agree.
I don't have any evidence for this at all, but there's always been something inside of me that I would want you on my pub quiz team. And again, I've got zero evidence. We've never been to a pub quiz, nor are we likely to go to a pub quiz anytime in the future.
I love them. My husband hates them. I love them. I used to have those apps on my phone. You know, you could play pub quizzes on your phone. And my friend Simon London, who reviews podcasts on my radio show, and he has reviewed yours, and he will do so again. I will remind him. But he and he loves you. But he's a TV producer and a writer and all sorts. And he runs a charity pub quiz. And together we host one once a year for Amanda Redman. And I have to sit there and have my hat, you know, put my hand in my mouth so I don't answer the questions because I'm involved with it. I think they're great fun.
Well, when we get back to going out and going to pub quizzes, should we go to a pub quiz together?
Yes! Yes!
Gabby Rosalind, thank you so, so much for coming
on. You're just a dream.
Do you know what? I've had a very busy day and it's been a bit up and down and you've really cheered me up no end.
Oh, bless you. What have you cooked today?
I haven't cooked anything. I was cooking from Wednesday of last week up until sort of Friday night when I was delivering food. So I haven't really thought about that. I bought some soup for my lunch today. That's how dull my day was.
That's not like you.
I know, it's really not. I'm going to finish our conversation and move on to what I'm going to devour tonight.
What's that?
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't made my mind up.
Oh. Oh, you're so lovely. You really are one of my favourite people on the planet. I think you're such a good egg. You really are.
Well, I really appreciate you spending some time with me because I know that you're super busy. Oh, before you go, we've got to tell people about your podcast quickly because I know we don't sort of plug things on here, but you started your podcast, was it during lockdown or was it after lockdown?
Yeah, no, well, it was after. It was meant to be just before, but then that lockdown happened and we delayed it and then when it was sort of over, we just thought, why are we delaying it? We can do it. It's because we were going to do it face-to-face. But, that Gabby Rosalind podcast, and the reason we called it that is because people always say, oh, have you heard that Craig Parkinson podcast? So we just thought we'll do that, make it easier. And you will, please, will you come on? Will you return the favour, please? Will you come on?
I will. Yes, of course. I will be
honest. You have to say yes now. Yay!
I will do a plug in the outro for your podcast, even though, because I know, you know, I really want people to listen because it's lovely and we all need some Gabby Rosalind in our life. And we have done this week. Gabby Rosalind, thank you for coming on the Two Shot podcast. I love you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, darling.
And another episode is done. What did I tell you? Yeah, you're smiling now, eh? That's just how she is. It's not forced. It's just how she is. And it's not nauseating. It's lovely. You know, sometimes you just meet people and go, why are you too happy? Stop being so happy. She is. And I'm made up. She came on. I really hope you enjoyed it.
Well, we're recording more. We're going to try and get a few out to take us over the Christmas and New Year break. And of course, we'll be back in January. And stand by your beds and your Instagram and Facebook and Twitter feeds. As is the way at Christmas, myself and Griff normally get together and we record a little Christmas video message for you. We're going to try and do that this year, obviously apart, but we're just working on the best way to do it. So, of course, you'll be seeing our silly faces and we'll be thanking you for sticking with us as ever. So, until next week, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. Take care, won't you? I'll see you next week. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.
Looking for a new podcast to listen to? Here's what we love, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Hey, I'm Bert from The Bert Show. You have people on a show that really don't like morning shows.
Stealing an entire school bus. I gotta be honest, that is my dream still.
Why take initiative when you can take a nap?
I like keeping it real and I like keeping it gross.
So we created a show that we really wanted to hear. It's real and it's funny and we will talk about our personal lives. We're not scared of anything.
Okay, if you want this prize right here, you're gonna have to work for it.
What I love most about this show is everybody's vulnerability.
And though our perspectives may be different, working together is actually fun.
We put the fun in dysfunction.
I think it's unlike anything that you've heard before.
The Bert Show. New episodes every weekday and the weekly top 10 on Saturdays. Listen to this show on Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast recommends.